Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with reluctant therapist. Okay. Good afternoon. Yes.
So, I'm so excited. I have an add-on to my introduction.
Oh, I already finished.
Oh, sorry. Pet whisper.
I like that.
I'm a kitten whisperer. So, you know, generally I set aside Tuesday to prep for the show. I think about the topics all week, and then Tuesday's my day. You know, I get up, I work out, I kind of come up with the format, and, you know, it's designated for this. Would you like to know what I spent my morning today doing?
Of course.
I taught my kitten to fetch.
That is impressive.
And I showed you the video right before we went on the air, which is why I'm out of breath because I was running around the studio showing you videos. But my kitten literally fetches, doesn't it?
It does. I wouldn't have believed it if she hadn't have caught it on video. I have a dog that won't fetch. I have a retriever that won't fetch. So she's a yellow lab and she'll go run after whatever you throw, but she will not bring it back to you. So getting a cat to do that is truly impressive.
Thank you. So I think we should add that to the intro now. I am officially a kitten whisperer. And it's so much fun, you know, and of course, I'm in that typical place, right, that happens to all many moms, is that the kids say, we need to get a kitten. We only have these old cats, and they don't do anything, and so we need to have a kitten, young life in the house. And I was like, oh, I don't know, because you know what happens, and mom ends up having to take care of the cat. But I went ahead, and we adopted Lewis, and we brought Lewis into the station a couple weeks ago, and he's adorable. But of course, I lose large periods of time out of my life now daily because I am playing with this kitten because I want him to be socialized and I want him to, you know, to be cuddly and I'm not just going to lock him up and ignore him. But I am losing large swaths of my day. My mom's called me twice this week and said, what are you up to? And both times I said, I'm sitting at the computer, but I'm really playing with the cat. So, but I have now officially taught my kitten how to fetch. And I feel like my life is basically complete at this point.
I used to have a cat that would help me write checks. I'd be sitting at my desk trying to write a check, and he'd come up and like bat the pen out of my hand continuously. And
mostly he was saying, stop writing checks and come throw
play
the ball
with me.
For me.
Yep.
I know. But it's this funny thing. So I have officially, maybe instead of just saying cat whisperer, it's going to have to say crazy cat lady. Mm-hmm. She is a crazy cat woman.
I was way ahead of you there.
Thank you. Yeah, I can't wait till next week. But this week, I'm really interested to know what you're going to say about this topic. If it resonates with you in some way, if it draws you into the conversation. Because ever since I started thinking about this topic, I can't get out of my head, and I keep kind of going back to it and thinking about the nuanced layers of what this topic means or how it relates. So I hope you are as engaged in the idea as I am, because I do think there's something to it. I do think that there is something to this idea that is deeply connected to our mental health and well-being on a large scale. And if you look at mental health in our country right now and around the world, but really primarily let's just focus on the United States, we have an epidemic level of mental health issues. I mean, open the paper, we have another shooting, or we have suicides, or, you know, we have people trying to get services, or the overdiagnosis of certain disorders, you know, the over-medication. I mean, we have a huge mental health issue. And so trying to find the pieces of disconnect that are causing so many people to feel so ill at ease, diseased, is a challenge, because I really don't fundamentally believe that it's a biological issue, right? It's not like a cold or diabetes or, you know, heart disease. Mental illness, for the most part, on the large, wide spectrum, at one end being schizophrenia or psychotic breaks or something that could be biologically or genetically prone to. But on the other end, where most people struggle with their mental health, where the majority of people struggle with their mental health, with depression and anxiety at moderate levels, okay? So let's say that on the spectrum of mental health, the majority of people struggle with moderate anxiety and depression. That's the most common things we see. And so there's got to be some underlying things that connect all of this, all of these disorders together. There must be some things that cause so many people to be feeling levels of depression, anxiety. So if you can go there with me, then we can agree that there are some basic tenets that we understand about maintaining good mental health. We need to have meaningful work. We've talked about that, right? Something that gives you a sense of doing something that matters, whether it's taking care of your family or the work itself that gives you a sense of meaning, or you know, the work has to have a meaningful peace in your life. Deeply connected relationships, right? Having something and a connection with someone that is deeper than a Facebook like every now and then, but people that you witness their life and they witness yours, and you can count on each other and you are there for each other and you have intimacy, deeply connected relationships. Providing service to others is another tenet to good mental health. Having a spiritual foundation or sense in some way is a tenet of good mental health. We understand those pieces. And so when we are lacking one of those pieces, then we can say, it would make sense that you would feel depressed or isolated or alienated or anxious. You know, we would understand those feelings of being ill at ease if those pieces are missing from your life. But there are other parts. There are other things that go along with that. And where I'm going today is the story of place. We need to feel connected to something larger than ourselves, from work, relationships, service to others, and spirituality. But what about place? Where do we feel that deeply rooted connection to land, to where we are? You know, what draws us to something greater than ourselves? So the reason I got kind of into this train of thought is because I happened upon an interview that Guy Rathman did last week with Alan G. Johnson, who's an author, and the book he wrote is Not From Here. And the book touches a lot of areas, but the part that stood out for me is this gentleman, his father passed away, and he was trying to figure out where he would take his ashes to spread his father's ashes. And he'd asked his father, where would you like to have your ashes spread? And his father didn't have a preference, didn't have a place that really mattered that much to him. And so Alan Johnson goes off on this trek to kind of following his father's life, places that he lived, to find that place where he could spread his father's ashes. And so along in that journey, he realized, Alan Johnson, that he was bereft of any connection to any place of deep meaning or belonging. And this kind of set up this existential angst of what is it to belong to some place? What is it to have a deep connection to some place where our ancestors are from, or where we know that, you know, curve in the river that we are know when the sun rises and sunsets, you know, that deep feeling of being one with the land. And he said, Alan Johnson said, you know, I think that one of the reasons we have such a huge epidemic of alienation and isolation and people who feel restless and disconnected is because we are a population in the United States of people who are not connected to place, to land. So that's going to be our conversation today. Are you connected to a certain place, to a piece of land? Do you carry some sort of rootedness, a groundedness in some place that feels sacred to you? Are you living on the land of your ancestors? Or are you connected to a place in such a deep way that you would have your ashes spread there? Have you thought about where you would have your ashes spread once you passed, if that's something you're going to do? Is there a place you would want to have your life remembered? This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. If you're just tuning in, you are always invited to be part of this conversation. 805-781-3875. It's a number to be a part of the show. You can also find me on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or on our Twitter. It's at EBTRT for Twittering. And we're just kind of ramping up for that. We have our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can always send me an email to Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com. And of course, previous shows are available at kcbx.org. And thanks to my wonderful summer assistant intern, Ashlyn, we are working to start making the shows available by podcast. So that's exciting. And I keep saying it out loud because if I say it out loud, that will mean that we're going to make it happen sooner than later. So that's what's up with the with our life here. So I'm curious to know what you think about this topic. 805-781-3875. All right, so let's talk about place from the way I understand it, or land or connection. And it draws on the interview that I was listening to with Alan Johnson, so I want to give him credit, and Guy Rathman for bringing up these topics and kind of sending me down this path of thought. Because Alan Johnson said, you know, there is, for Americans, because we don't have, you know, ancestral roots necessarily, unless you're an indigenous person here in the United States, we don't have a connection to a place where our ancestors walked the same streets. You know, if you look at ancient mythology or stories that are passed down, you know, the oral traditions from generation to generation, a lot of the reasons that they connect communities or families or clans or people together is because the stories take place in this area, this land that is recognizable, that when you're hearing the story 100 years later, you're still sitting in the same spot on the same rocks or by the same river or under the same tree that your great-grandparents sat under and originally told the story. And it was interesting because I was talking to my mom today before the show, because I wanted to ask my mom, you know, this question, where would you want your ashes spread? And although we've already talked about it before, I just wanted to check in with her before I talked about it on the air to make sure I was telling a correct story. But the thing that was interesting is my mom's a voracious reader, and she and my father live in the Salinas area, and she loves the work of Steinbeck. And I was thinking, you know, one of the reasons she probably loves the work of Steinbeck is because he writes about this place that she and my father love so much. And in the stories, he describes the landscapes and Castle Rock and different areas in the Salinas Valley that resonate so deeply with my parents. So I think that connection is continued with Steinbeck's work. So when we talk about this deep connection to place, you know, where is it that you know your soul resides? Where is your soul calm and collected? So from my mother, she said that her ashes will be, she and my father grew up in the East Coast. And so she said, if you can, I would want everyone to fly, you know, back east and spread it on the Atlantic Ocean. And then because our family's so connected to the Monterey area, and we've had such a connection for happy times and family events, that she would want to be in the Pacific Ocean. So I said, that's fair. But it's interesting because they're very general, right? It's the ocean in the east and the ocean in the west. It's not really a particular place. It's not a garden or a plot of land or some, you know, place that they return to. You know, maybe, I guess, that off that beach would make sense. And so I wonder if that's kind of universal with people in Western cultures, is that we are not of a permanent state. We maybe don't have a specific piece of land. Maybe your family, you know, visited some place over and over again and it brought that up for you. But I'm just curious to know, you know, how is it that we develop a sense of belonging that can help us feel tethered and grounded to the world around us? Because I think what Alan Johnson says has some validity, that we are restless people because we are rootless. We are groundless. We don't have this sense of deep belonging to a certain place. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Trish, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I just love this topic. It's very near and dear to my heart. I used to live in the mountains up in the Sierras, and my heart and soul absolutely have to get back there at least once a year and feel my feet on the granite and get next to a stream and just be at peace. That's a really, really important thing for me to do every now and then. And then the other place that I have grown to absolutely love is our home. We are lucky enough to have an acre in rural Rio Grande. And my garden is, I started gardening with flip-flops now because I can feel the soil. And tonight our dinner is probably 95% of what we grew. And sharing that space with others has become really important to me. So those two places, Yosemite and my yard.
And so is
my places.
Is there a specific, you know, place in Yosemite, or is it just somewhere in the mountains? I mean, is there?
Yeah, it's also the Sierras, but I'm fortunate now that once a year I get to go up with a class and camp, so I get my fix. Mm-hmm. And so I just call it Yosemite. But it's basically the western Sierras between Yosemite and Tahoe, up in there. And where the granite is smooth and warm and there's water rushing by, those two elements really speak to me.
And so I'm curious to know, if you aren't able to get to that place and take your shoes off and feel the granite, how does that impact your mental health?
It does. I get a little anxious, and I don't let it happen. My husband is very supportive of this, that he knows that I really physically and mentally and spiritually need that. Mm-hmm. And so we'll, you know, if I haven't been there and my time is up, we will take a trip and go up to the Sierras. So I haven't not been able to, but when it's getting close, I just make it happen.
So you can feel the restless calling to the mountains.
Yes, I can. And I think, you know, you were talking earlier about just people not being in nature. My daughter attended a camp called Camp Natroma between Paso Robles and Cambria that's pretty rural and pretty rustic. And she loves L.A. She lives in L.A. She goes to school in L.A. She works in L.A. Loves the city life. Would like to settle down there when she's out of college. But for her vacation this year, she took a week, her week off, and she went up to Camp Natoma to volunteer because she really felt the need to be disconnected. No cell service, no phone, no internet, anything like that. And I just loved that she also is getting that inherent need in her body to be in nature. Mm-hmm. And we've taken our kids backpacking and camping and hiking a lot as they were young. But I think it's coming home to roost, and that really made me feel very happy.
Well, because you can feel the connection or the intergenerational message being passed along. Thank you, Trish, for calling. And, you know, and I think that that's one of the things that Alan Johnson, author of Not From Here, was talking about, was that one of the things he found interesting is that in Western culture, we may not be connected to the same land as our parents were, that we are a culture that just moves so quickly, that goes from place to place. We don't think about land the way Indigenous people look at land. We think about land as real estate. Just as we don't really think of human beings as citizens or humans, we consider them consumers. That's how things have shifted in our culture, that we look at the human experience as basically being one of a consumer on a massive scale. Well, the other idea is that when we look at land as real estate, something to be bought and sold and owned, we are disconnected from being a part of that land, right? We're confusing a sense of ownership with a sense of belonging to. And so that change in our psyche is something that is profound, that it ends up causing us to feel restless and disconnected. You know, I think that one of the reasons so many people feel drawn to the Central Coast was because Oprah Winfrey talked about it being the happiest city in, I don't know if it's the world or United States, but there was, you know, a drastic shift where people heard that call and they have such a desperate desire to get to some place that feels like home or feels grounding, that they followed that call to this place. I mean, it's just my guess, and I'd be curious to know what drew you here to this area. Was it something about being in the happiest place? Because I don't know if, you know, getting here is going to give people that sense of groundedness that we so search for on a deeply rooted desire. And so from a mental health perspective, without having a sense of groundedness or rootedness, what do we see? We see people feeling anxious. We see them being depressed. But we also see that because we're not of the land, we start to put our identity into objects instead of our identity being reflected in the landscape in which we live. So think of the indigenous peoples who not only feel that they are of the land, but the land is of them, and that there is kind of this interconnectedness. There's no ownership, that the land is seen as being alive and full of its own energy, right? It is not an inert space. And so if you are of the land and you feel the land is of you, there is a sense of groundedness, like you are a tree yourself, or no matter where you traveled, you would still feel those roots in this place. And because we are a culture that doesn't really inherently have that rootedness to a land or a place or a space, then we end up getting connected to objects. To the car we drive, or to the clothes that we wear, or things that identify us with labels, right? That we're looking for, searching for an identity through these other things because we don't have a groundedness in place. So what do you think? 805-781-3875. If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Here are the questions I propose to you. Is there a place that you feel so deeply connected to that you would want your ashes to be spread there? And have you asked your parents that? Do you have a plan for that idea? And maybe it's a little morbid, but it kind of led me into this thought of, you know, is it someplace general, just somewhere on the West Coast, or is it some specific place? Does your family, you know, have a place that they've returned to for generations and generations? My family is very connected to a place on the Jersey Shore, and my grandmother bought the house, so it's not, you know, generations and generations, but it's 75 years that our family has been going to this place, and so I feel a strong sense of heart connection when I'm there. I feel deeply settled. My soul feels calm. And surprisingly, my soul feels at home in upstate New York. Now, I was born in upstate New York, in Auburn, and I often wonder, is that because wherever we're born, does a piece of us stay there, even though we tend to move from place to place, even though we pick up and change houses and change states so quickly? Why is it that when I get there, I feel incredibly at peace, and I just want to be in the water there. I also feel really calm and connected in Monterey, as I mentioned before. But interestingly, I never have felt deeply rooted here. And my husband and I, we've lived here for 30 years on the Central Coast, and it's never really been that same place. Now, it might be because it's where we're busy and where our life happens, and that it's where we raise our children, and so there's never, you know, that time of quieting. But I sometimes think it's something deeper than that, that, you know, maybe because my people aren't here, or something about this space is not mine. Because the only reason I judge that is there are spaces I get to where I know that they're mine, that I feel at home. And it's funny, my friends and I used to, you know, have those late night college talks. We'd say, where does your soul reside? And it's been this ongoing conversation for a long time, for years and years with my friends. And where does your soul reside? So somehow that college age us had a sense that there was a place that would make us feel more grounded and whole. And I think, you know, it's a challenge. So what do you think about this? Where would you spread your ashes? Do you have a place that your family has ancient roots for generations and generations? You know, where there's a river or a tree or a place that you deeply connect to? And if you don't, why not? And what brought you here? Were you drawn in search of some place that would give you that sense of connection? 805-781-3875. Ruben, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
You know, it's my situation has come on multi-layered. As I drive down the grade on my speakerphone, of course,
Thank you.
I look around me, and it brings me a certain amount of inner peace, just intrinsically living in this area. But it's only one layer. You know, for me, maybe I'm a little more messed up than the average person, but, you know, I find that I have to live in the moment. I need to push things a little bit. So being on a booming Big Sur coast with huge waves ripping up on the beach, either going out to spearfish or, you know, maybe to harvest some Big Sur jade, you know, it forces me to think about nothing else, and that creates an inner peace for me. And when it comes to being connected to something, you know, I mean, the multi-generational family, I come from a lineage of Hispanics that they came over from Puerto Rico, and then the other family came over to work on the railroad from Guadalajara. And, you know, we talk about these things, but we're so distant. You know, my family, about after World War II, Korean War, like so many other families, you know, it's all about creating your own little nuclear family, finding your own little private Idaho, and it's not working.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you think is the result of that? What symptoms do we see because we're all trying to be so independent?
You know, I don't think we establish roots, both metaphorically and physically.
And I'm also curious.
So, yeah, it's hard. You know, I mean, it's difficult, but, you know, I look at my family, and I don't think, you know, selling them on this whole thing about them having to go out on their own, why can't they stay with us for 10 or 12 years? Why can't we build a foundation and continue with that garden and build a house in the back and let them live there? And, you know, but it's so deep-seated that, you know, they're, well, we have to go out on our own, and we have to do this, and we have to do that, and it just simply doesn't work. So when you talk about going back to, like, the indigenous peoples, it just pulls us even further away from trying to accomplish that.
Hmm. Tell me,
you know,
why.
I think when we got away from the extended family, that was just another further pulling us away from ever accomplishing that.
And you hit a key date, Ruben, because you talk about World War II, and there is a social disconnect that was huge post-World War II because of the affluence of the country. Right? So we really are talking about a 50-plus year span. It's not hundreds of years we've had this change.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think we can track this, and I don't think we're better for it. I really don't. You know, I mean, my dad felt that it was his job. At 17 and a half, I was out on my own, and I don't think I was better for it. I think there were still a lot of lessons I needed to learn. And my father grew up, you know, kind of in an agrarian upbringing where farming was very important, and I love those stories. And I've tried to create a bit of that, but I've also been deep rooted in the fact that my kids have got to go to college and make it on their own. And you know, I'm really at a crossroads where I'm really reevaluating that. Is that really meaningful? Wouldn't it possibly be more meaningful to have them around into their 20s and 30s until they're really actually ready to go out on their own and maybe find a spouse and, you know, and settle somewhere and maybe not so far away? I don't know.
No, you're singing to the choir, Ruben, because I feel that disconnect. And because I work with people who are severely feeling the disconnect, right? The isolation and the sense of loss and emptiness and wondering, why can't I feel it in my job? And why doesn't my car make me happier? And, you know, everyone's singing the same song, but
doesn't
we don't
matter. Yes. It we just don't, doesn't matter.
It doesn't fill it. And we don't, but the thing is, we don't want to have the conversation you're wanting to have, which is the thing we gave up was staying together and making it work. You know, and I blame a bit of it on the mental health industry also, because the big push of the 70s was, if you're not happy, get divorced, go out, it's all about you, you know, follow your bliss. I mean, that was very much a push of the mental health industry. Your family's dysfunctional. You need to get away from them. So we didn't teach people how to live within community. We said, no, go be your own.
Well, we've sent mixed messages. We had the family bed where everybody, literally the little ones, crawled into bed, and we all very close, very small house, very intimate. But, you know, with the mixed messages, oh, you need to go out to college immediately, and you need to go out, and you need to strive out, and you need to achieve, and you need to go out on your own and buy your own house, and you need to create this and create that. And I'm in the midst of a divorce myself, and I am no longer a believer in this, and I'm definitely at a bit of a, like I said, a crossroads.
Yeah, I hear you, Ruben. And I think you're bringing up a story that a lot of people are feeling because there is no cultural support for connectedness. We are told.
No, and most of the family that was supported that in my family, they've died off.
Yeah.
You know, I've lost a mother that had very strong ties to the family. She was like the glue that held us together, and she was the last of it.
Yeah.
And she's gone.
So maybe that's your job. Maybe that's your next assignment is to find that place and to settle. Because we talk about grounding.
I'm hoping once I'm able to settle my own life and my own mind, mm-hmm. that I can create that kind of cohesiveness that I feel is so contradictory in my actions of just going through this divorce process. But we couldn't seem to bring that kind of cohesiveness and that inner peace together, maybe separately. Maybe we can. You know, there are patriarchs out there. There are patriarchs.
Absolutely.
Like, I think my grandfather was one. I mean, I definitely am in support of the mother and the maternal. And, you know, if you track my, there are strong matrilineal in my family too. But, you know, I digress. Anyway, it's been very nice. I've enjoyed this and it was cathartic for me, I must say.
Thank you so much for calling, Ruben, and drive carefully. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. The number to be part of our conversation today is 805-781-3875. I brought up the conversation about place and a sense of belonging. And are we rooted or are we rootless? Or do you feel rooted or rootless? You know, it kind of came from this conversation. The author, Alan J. Johnson, he wrote a book, Not From Here, found that when he was going to spread his father's ashes, there was no family place, no historical groundedness. He felt like he was rootless and realized that we are a country that is rootless and that if we don't have a place of grounding, of belonging, we lose a great sense of our identity of who we are. And as a culture, we've now shifted that sense of identity into things that really have no permanence. So what do you think about this? 805-781-3875. We'll be back to take your calls. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Karen, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I wanted to tell you that 20 years ago, I visited the Surrender Field in Yorktown, Virginia. It's a historical place. At the site, there's nothing there. It's just this gorgeous, wide-open green field with a fence on either side. And I found that it really resonated to me. Are with me, and there's a big sign that actually says Surrender Road, and I love the idea of being there. I am born and raised Californian. I don't feel connected at all. I've lived in San Luis Obispo most of my life. My father died some years ago, and he didn't leave any instructions, which was very difficult for me and my brother. So after that, I started to explore some meaningful options for me. And through NPR, I learned about this really neat program where you can donate your body to the University of Texas, San Marcos. Hmm. They have a forensic science department. Basically, they bury your body in a shallow grave in a very hot environment. And the bones are studied for many purposes, but one of them is age progression related to missing children. So that really resonated me in terms of having some kind of a meaningful purpose. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was calling about today.
And I'm curious, Karen, what drew you to New York?
Oh, this is actually Virginia.
Oh, Virginia,
Yorktown, Virginia.
I'm sorry.
I happened to be there, ironically, for a friend's funeral. And I just went out wanting some, you know, just some space to think. And I went for a drive and I found this road.
And it just felt like home?
Yeah, there was just, again, there was a peacefulness to it, mm-hmm. and it resonated with me. It was in a remote location. There weren't any cities nearby.
So there's something primal, I think, in all of us for a longing towards solitude. You know, that in order to even hear our own voice or to connect to our deeper self, we have to be in a place where there are no cell phones and there is no city noise or city lights. And I think that's another piece of the sense of identity and groundedness that we aren't encouraged anymore to find that place. And I also appreciate you bringing up requesting of parents to tell their children what their directions are for their body or cremation or where they would like their ashes, because I think that is a heavy burden to place on anyone to have to make that decision. And that was kind of the impetus of the book I've been talking about, Not From Here, was that the author really felt lost because his father left him no guidance and there was no place that felt of importance enough to leave his father.
Well, you're aware, and many listeners too, it's almost a taboo subject.
Yes.
So many people don't want to discuss it, and I'm very, very open. It doesn't scare me. I think I'm the kind of person who wants my family to be aware, and I have made arrangements with the University of Texas. I wanted to also speak about connected to things. Mm-hmm. I am not. As a matter of fact, right now I'm in the process of getting rid of as many things as I possibly can. I am such a minimalist at heart that I do not have a car. I don't have a smartphone. I don't have a computer. I don't have a TV. And that's the only way that I can live among all of the noise. Mm-hmm. I do listen to radio, of course.
Which I'm happy that you do and tune in. And I think there is that we all still need a sense of community in some way, you know. So being a part of the radio listening community can be powerful. And Karen, I appreciate your thoughtful take on this subject, and I hope you'll call back again. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. We're talking about a sense of belonging. Do you have a place? Are you in search of some place or land or area that makes you feel at home? Do you feel at home in your place that you are right now? Does your soul feel content where you are? 805-781-3875. Connor, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hey.
Hi.
Nice to be on the show. Thanks for having me. So what I want to talk about was I've been traveling to Australia. I've been there a few times. I spent a year living there on the north coast of New South Wales. And that's a place where I feel more at home, and I feel like meaningful relationships come to me more easily, and I feel like the people there understand me and I understand the people there. And I grew up in Santa Barbara, and I've lived here my whole life, and I was actually born in the house that I live in today. So I also have somewhat of a strong connection to the land around here. Mm-hmm. But I feel like as I grow older, and Santa Barbara feels like it gets a little bit busier every year, and I don't know, I always feel like Australia is the place where I'm really meant to be. But it's hard because, you know, all my family is here, and as well as the fact that it's not that easy to just go live in Australia. You have to go through processes with getting visas and all of that. It's a funny kind of dilemma that I have, because I feel like I should be there, but I'm here, you know?
Can I ask you how old you are, Connor?
Yeah.
How old are you, Connor?
Oh, I'm 22.
So you are of the perfect age to have this conversation, because I wanted to bring it up in this part of the show anyway. And are you familiar with the concept of the hero's journey?
Maybe vaguely familiar, if you want to elaborate on that.
I will. So I think one of the important pieces of this story about place and connectedness and roots and grounding is that part of our journey is to kind of go away from that place of groundedness and roots and family and people to test our limits. You know, this idea that we are have to stay in one place forever, that we're somehow just restless people that need to get out and that's not natural, isn't really true, because there is a developmental piece that's very important to go out and test ourselves in the world, to see who we are when we're not in the context of our family, to get to know the voice of our identity when we're separate from the places that we call home. And so at 22, it's very natural that you should be feeling this call. And are you familiar with the Lord of the Rings series?
Yeah, I am.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's very much a hero's journey story, where Frodo, I think, is the person who hears the call that he needs to go on this journey, and he doesn't want to go, right? He doesn't want to leave his comfortable home, but he gets drawn on this journey, and it's very metaphorical for the idea that we each have to go out and test our limits, right? But we meet people along the way who support our journey. We go to places that teach us things about ourselves. And then the important part of the hero's journey that the Western culture doesn't get is that in order to fully become a hero in our story, we need to come back from that journey. We return to our homeland. We return to that place of our people, of our groundedness, and we share our story, and then we encourage another on their hero's journey. So it makes a lot of sense to me that you're feeling this pull to Australia, because there's something that you need to test in yourself to feel, to experience, to, you know, feel overwhelmed and frightened and then conquer it and then bring that back in some way.
Yeah. Everything you're saying definitely rings true. Everything you say, definitely. I feel that. And when I go back there, I always feel, I feel good about myself, and I feel at home. And then it's funny, because it's like I have this dual kind of thing going on, where when I come home, you know, obviously it's the place I was born and all of my friends and family live here. And it feels really good usually when I'm back for, you know, the first couple of weeks or months or something. But then I start to get restless again, and I start to want to get back to, you know, either back to Australia, to the place where I have those meaningful relationships and where I feel at home, or just, because it's hard to get over there, sometimes we'll just want to go on, you know, a trip, say a road trip up to Northern California, or just somewhere else where I, like you're saying, where I feel I'm testing myself, and I feel like I'm the person that I am on my own, rather than the person that my family and everyone knows me as in Santa Barbara, where it's my home.
It's a beautiful thing to be able to see who we are outside of our family. And it's beautiful to return and be able to tell them about our adventures. And that's the hero's journey. So do a little research on it. I'm giving you some homework. It's summer, I know. But do a little research on the hero's journey. Joseph Campbell talks about it. And watch Lord of the Rings again. And then see where you need to push yourself. Maybe there's something calling you there. There's an assignment of sort. Maybe there's a year of service you need to do to really test your limits. And then you'll be ready. And it might be a year, it might be 5 years, but, you know, at some point you'll know when it's time to return. But the important part is staying connected to your roots.
Yeah. Great.
Let me know where you end up, Connor, all right?
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for the advice.
Thanks for calling in. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, 805-781-3875. Peggy, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, this is a subject that's perplexed me for years. I have lived in San Luis County for 37 years, and I love it here. It's beautiful, but I've never felt really a part of the land. My dad was in the Air Force for 20 years, so I was moving the first 18 years of my life. So I have always felt rather disconnected because there's not one place that I could really call home. And I would like to connect with people that have had a similar experience. The only place that I've felt is somewhat a feeling of belonging is when I I have three grown sons, and took my youngest son and granddaughter back to Asheville, North Carolina, where my grandfather was from. My dad's dad. I never knew him because he died when my dad was young, but I just love that area so much, and I often feel like if I knew anybody or had family there, I would definitely move there.
Well, it's interesting because I was just there this summer in Asheville, and it has a real rich spirit to it, the land and the area around it. I can feel that. And I imagine that there would be something powerful about tracing a bit of your family roots and going back and maybe seeing, you know, the land and allowing yourself to feel it and take your shoes off and walk it. Because I really do believe that our mental health and well-being, our psyches, demand of us to connect with land that has historical significance with our ancestors and with our family. I do believe.
When I checked in with Ancestry.com a few years ago, I was amazed to find that my dad's dad, grandfather's family had lived there going back to the 1600s up in those mountains. And it just gives me the chills to think about it. You know, I mean, it is really significant.
It is. The richness in that is something to really pay attention to. And I don't know if you have grandchildren or with your grown children, but maybe you need to organize some sort of family, excursion to this place. And really all of you spend some time, shoes off, walking the dirt, feeling it, taking some dirt back with you. And see how that grounds you, because I'm really talking about this sense of emptiness that we carry, that many of us carry. And I think that emptiness is a lack of groundedness in a place that feels like home. And as beautiful as San Luis Obispo is, I mentioned earlier in the show, I've been here 30 years and I've never really felt that wholeness here. It's beautiful, great place to raise kids, but there are other places that I feel grounded to.
Other places you feel grounded to?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I feel not grounded in a lot of ways because my three sons grew up, went away to college, and stayed away. Yeah. And so I'm not near them and my grandchildren very often, and I really miss that.
I can appreciate that because my children are starting to go off on their own. I empathize with you. And I do encourage you, though.
Especially being a single person, it makes it extra hard.
It is. It's lonely, isn't it? And we're not a culture that really recognizes that. So that I think it's hard to say it out loud because I think we're told that, well, you need to find your own life and find your own interests, right, and find your own activities. But we're a communal people. We want to be with our people. And you know where the happiest place on earth is? It's not San Luis Obispo. It's in some of the poorest areas of India.
And that's what I've heard.
Yeah. And why is that? It's because they have hundreds and thousands of years of living in this space, and their families are on top of each other, and they are connected in deeply grounded ways. Their mental health, the India has a much better mental health record than we do. And when they have people that are struggling with schizophrenia, in our culture, we separate people from their families when they have a psychotic break or struggle with schizophrenia. In India and in some places in Finland and Norway, they bring the person into the family fold and the whole family surrounds them. And it helps to stabilize their mental health and sense of reality. So I encourage you, Peggy, to not think that it's anything just unique to you, but to really start to think about how do I connect? If my people have separated from me, how do I connect myself to my people? I think that's the assignment.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Yes, it is. If you figure it out, call me back and let me know.
Yeah, and you have an online site that I can...
Yes, you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Or we have a website, thereluctanttherapist.com. You can leave me a message there, and I'd love to hear from you.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks for calling in. Yes, we always encourage you to be part of the conversation on the air and off the air. We have our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You know, we are a community. I don't come each week and just shout out platitudes. I mean this when I say that the radio community is a place that we can at least reach out to each other and share our experiences and talk about those things that we are feeling and know that others feel the same way or at least are hearing our story. Craig, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. I would like to first say to you that I very much appreciate what you do with your show.
Thank you.
Very much appreciate the fact you're trying to promote dialogue and good health. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Craig.
And like you, I have very strong ties in the Monterey area, particularly Carmel Valley. Mm. It's very near and dear to my heart. I lived and worked up there for a few years on a ranch, and I still have very good friends that live in a beautiful place right on the Carmel Valley River. I would imagine you're familiar with Garland Park.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that's one of my favorite places to be. I'm at home out in nature. So I want my ashes, some of them scattered in Garland Park, some of them in the Carmel Valley River, some of them here in San Luis, and some of them here in the ocean. And I so much agree. We are a society so out of touch with nature. And I think it's very sad.
And why is that? You know, why is it when we all know...
Why are we so out of touch?
Yes, because we all know this, right? There's something deep inside of us calling us to be out there, and yet somehow many people are able to ignore that call and not be out, not take their shoes off.
Maybe they just never had the chance to be in nature, or they're just so affected by television and billboards and glossy magazines. You know, Elizabeth, one of the things I have done over the years, I write songs. And I wrote a song back in the 90s called Stuff, which is about consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could I read you just the first verse?
Please do.
There's a hole in the soul of most of the human race, a hole in our psyche nobody wants to face. So far removed from our home, the earth, we only know how to measure our worth, spending our time standing in line to buy stuff. Non-renewable, non-reusable stuff.
Beautiful.
That's it. So that's, I don't know why. I really don't know. I mean, I grew up in Hollywood. I was very lucky to grow up in an area where there were hills behind me, near the Hollywood Bowl. So I had hills to play in as a child. And I think I was very lucky to have that. And I've been drawn to nature all my life. That's where I am at home, with nature and my dog.
And Craig, will you, if you get a chance, send me a copy of your song, if you can email it or maybe post the lyrics on my Facebook page or something. I'd love to hear the rest of it. And
I'd be happy to do that. And as well as that, I would be happy to, I'll drop a CD off actually at the station for you, put it in your box, and you can actually hear the song as well as the lyrics.
I'll look forward to it, Craig. Thank you for taking the time to call.
Thank you for taking my call, Elizabeth.
We're talking about place today. I heard an interview with author Alan Johnson. He wrote Not From Here about his thoughts and take on our culture being groundless, rootless, and that maybe there's a deeper connection to our mental health, that maybe this wandering, this sense of restlessness, this sense of anxiety, depression, searching, so many of these mental health epidemic that we experience with our mental health are maybe connected to our inability to be grounded and rooted. And maybe it's not for lack of wanting to feel grounded and rooted, but maybe the message we've been told for the last 50, 60 years is that it doesn't matter where you are, that it's just a place, that we don't look at land as a sacred connection between human and tree and human and river and human and mountains, that we've lost our interconnectedness with that world around us, with that place, and we've been told that doesn't matter, that we've stopped looking at land as a sacred energy field and more as just real estate, something to be bought and sold, you know, something that we barter back and forth. And once we remove that sense of sacred connection to place, we lost a sacred sense of our own identity. So what do you think about that? I think there's something to needing to take your shoes off, go earthing, as they call it, and walking in those places that have deep meaning to you and your family and your history. And if you don't know it, you need to find it and you need to be there. And we need to somehow start challenging this cultural idea that place doesn't matter, that a house is a house. And you'll notice that you're really disconnected if you start feeling that your identity is connected to the car you drive or the clothes you wear or this hairstyle you have. You know, those are all very shiny, glossy ways of preventing us from being connected to that hole in our heart that desperately wants to be connected to something greater than ourselves. Pearl, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yes.
Hi.
Yes, I'm sorry. I don't know how quite to explain this. I am a senior. I just in my 70s. mid-70s. For all at once, my children seem to be wanting to take over my life 100%. They want to control whatever I spend, how I spend it, what my bank account is. I took my car in to be repaired, and they're having it held up there. They don't want me to have an automobile. I have not ever had an accident, and maybe just one ticket when I was in my teens. I've been an excellent driver. I've made a good income, always been very active, supported myself and quite well. I have three commercial buildings that I bought, of course, helped with a husband at that time who's been gone for quite some time. I don't know how to control them in this. They're not listening to me. They're not hearing me. They feel that they need to father me, I guess. I don't know how else to say it. Is it caring, or is it that they really are concerned about I may get married and what I have may go to somebody else? That's really the sense and the feeling that I have.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, Pearl, that I think that the challenge, and this is a topic that I think is a whole other show, so I'm happy that you brought it up. And if you leave your phone number with Ashlyn, my producer, I'd like to call you back and talk about this, because it's a little separate from today's topic, but I think this, you know, this conflict between adult children and independent parents is something that a lot of people are having a conversation with. Just as a brief side note, though, I do hope you have legal counsel of some sort, so that you have a partner in this with your children, or a mediation might be really important. There are great mediation services in the area that you could bring your family together and have this conversation. But please leave your number with Ashlyn, and we can have a further conversation about it. I think it's an excellent, excellent show topic. Rick, you get the last word today. What's on your mind?
I wanted to say something about how I reestablished my connection with San Luis. I had been living in various really nice natural locations that, unfortunately, well, Big Sur, Aspen, and then Telluride, Colorado, they got overrun by people who were coming there, too many people, too much money, and the place has lost their character. So I found myself back here, and I wasn't really connecting with the place, even though I loved being here. And then one day, because I was having back problems and all the shoes I had bothered me, I went out barefoot, and I started walking around the neighborhood barefoot, and I started really connecting with the place. It was really weird. And I ended up wandering all the way downtown, which is about maybe a mile from where I live. And each place I went, I think because I was barefoot, I was really connecting with the neighborhoods. I was seeing things I'd never seen before. And I think there's really some magical thing that happens when you're in a place barefoot. We did that back in the 60s. All kinds of people started going barefoot all the time, and I think when I did that, you know, this is probably 10 years ago, it took me back to that same thing, and I began to realize that our connection to place, a lot of it, is really tactile.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that woman who was talking about gardening barefoot, and she was feeling it. I felt the thing when I went in the sand down at Abilene. All of a sudden, I felt really connected to Abilene. I thought, wow, I went to high school here, and I thought, this really is my home, you know?
Well, and Rick, and I hate to cut you off because we've got to close up, but I love that we ended on this, because you're talking about earthing is the common term for it. Then, and I think if you are feeling disconnected, that's a great message to everyone, is to take your shoes off and get your feet and toes dug into the ground, and to really try to connect with that place that you're at, to breathe it in, to breathe the space. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett.